From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
If you're like a lot of people, you hang on to papers, you know, maybe in a completely disorganized and ramshackle fashion like Pete does, or maybe in an organized fashion. Okay, I'm not going to lay claim to that.
Totally you.
Totally me. But let's face it, paper clutters up our lives and has a stranglehold on some of us. That's me. My guest, Lisa Woodruff, is the founder of Organize 365 and a podcast by that name as well. She's now written a book that may be the most useful book to help deliver us from ourselves. It's called The Paper Solution: What to Shred, What to Save, and How to Stop It from Taking Over Your Life. And I say my guest because I spoke with her last week while you, Pete, were on assignment somewhere. And really happy to have her on the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
When I think about your book, I think about people reaching out to read your book as a means to get inspired. And you know how many of us have said, okay, this weekend I'm doing nothing but going through papers and getting rid of things. Mm-hmm. And it is the most daunting task. Why is that?
It's so daunting. Like, it is so daunting. And maybe you've actually done that one or even two weekends where you've said, I'm going to handle the paper, and you get to the end of the second weekend and you go, oh my gosh, there's so much left. Like, there's still so much, right? So I just want to acknowledge that getting your paper organized in your house is a huge undertaking. And I usually say it's going to take anywhere from 3 to 6 months, and that's okay. It's like a season of getting your paper organized. It's not a day or a weekend event. So you're right to think that it is a big thing that you're tackling. It is a big thing, but we can break it down. We can make it easier for you.
Okay, well, let's break it down then, because if it is a big task and we don't have to get it all done in one day, the roadblock that I come up against is like, well, then where do you start? Mm-hmm. And is it better to just start with all of it and go over sort of the top and just do the most obvious things and then dig in? Or, you know, do you take one file out of your file cabinet and go, okay, I'm going to tackle this one file?
Yes. So there's two different kinds of paper. There's actionable paper that's on your kitchen counter, that's in your purse, that's in your car, that's in your laundry room, it's on your nightstand. It's all these papers that need something done with them before we can file them or scan them or whatever we're going to end up doing. And then there's archive paper, which you have a lot more of, but is a lot easier to get through, which is filing paper or boxes of paper in storage and attics and garages and closets. And there's a lot more of that paper, but 85 of that can be shredded. So which do you want to talk about first, the archive or the active?
Well, let's talk about the archive, because I think we have this perception, and maybe this is what you can do to help clean up this perception of how long you actually have to keep things. I mean, we want to keep birth certificates and car titles and house titles and things like that. But we all have this idea, I think, that, oh, if the IRS comes back and audits us, we need to have, you know, and then how long is that we need to have paper to back it up?
So 85% of what you have saved in your archive paper can be shredded or recycled. A few things I want to say about that. Number one, you don't have to get rid of any paper you don't want to get rid of. So if you don't want to get rid of it, don't get rid of it. But if you really want to get as minimalistic on the paper as you can, you will be able to get rid of almost everything. Now, I am paranoid that the IRS is going to audit me. So the rule is you have to have 7 years of your tax documents and all the substantiating things that you wrote off if you itemized and had itemized deductions on your tax returns. Now, I've done some research, and the truth is, if you are audited, they will audit 1 year. If they find a discrepancy or they think that there is a problem there, then they will go back 3 years. If they find a problem there, then they will go back 7 years. It's extremely rare. If you have good record keeping and you know that you have been doing everything above board, you probably don't need 7 years, but I have all 7 years and everything in there because I do not like to mess with the IRS. That's all I have to tell you about that. As far as what we should keep, yes, birth certificates, social security cards, there really isn't a huge list of what you need to keep. And it's all spelled out for you in the paper solution. We have a list of exactly everything that you should keep in the United States as an American.
365 Organized started out of, about a dozen years ago when you were faced with the daunting and Herculean task of going through your father's paperwork upon his death. This is what launched you into thinking, wow, you could help a whole globe of people to do more easily what you figured out how to do. So what's the secret?
Yeah, I've always been an organized person. I became a professional organizer. I loved it. I love to teach the skill of organizing. But even amongst professional organizers, most professional organizers are like, oh, I don't want to deal with the paper, because there literally was no book about how to organize paper. How to digitize it, yes. But how to physically organize like binders of paper, there really isn't a book like that. And that's exactly what I wanted. Like when my dad became sick for 9 months, I wanted a binder I could fill out of his healthcare things. They would give you the numbers when you were in the hospital. And there's a range of numbers that are normal for blood pressure, for your blood sugar level, all these things. And they would keep saying it's in the normal range. Well, yes, but is it normal for my dad? Like there's a different normal temperature. It's not 98.6. Now with the coronavirus, all of my employees have to give me their temperature every single morning before they go into the office. And for some of them, their normal is like 96.5. So the range of normal, I wanted to be able to write that down and see, was his health getting better or getting worse within that range of normal? So that was when I first started to collect paper. And then when we became power of attorney and power of handling the estate and selling the home, there was so much paperwork involved and so many lawyers and so many experts, but no checklists. I couldn't find any checklists of what to find in those files and files and files of paper, so I could take the right papers to the lawyer to save me time and money and get that done in an effective fashion.
So you've created these checklists now for other people. And for those, you know, in the golden years, think about what you're leaving. You're leaving your children a legacy, of course, your legacy, but you also may be leaving them a mess. So this is a really great time for people to start thinking about the paperwork that they're leaving their wonderful children.
Yes. And, you know, as a child of baby boomer parents, I felt guilty. Like when my dad was sick and even when he was in hospice, I felt guilty going through his files because my parents were divorced and my mother was still living. Like I was invading their privacy. And so when you do create these binders that your children can use when they need to advocate for you and care for you and eventually settle your estate, as I already, you know, I'm 48, I already have mine done for my children. It gives them so much peace of mind. And there was so much my sister and I had to do as far as selling the family home, going through all of the possessions, meeting with all the lawyers. And it wasn't the only thing we were doing at that time, but it was one of the most important things we were doing.
So you've said that 85% of what we are keeping, of what we think maybe we have needed to keep, can be shredded. Mm-hmm. The other 15%, you call it the active paperwork. What's in that 15%?
Okay, so in archive, 15% you keep in binders or files or however you want to keep it. The active is a lot of paper. It's more than 15%. Like active paperwork would be your mail. If you have children, it's what they're bringing home from school, or even emails you're printing out that are coming from teachers. It's your clubs and organizations that you're in. It's your campaigns that you are part of in this political season. It's all those active things that you're doing and the paper representation that goes with it, forms that need to be filled out. Anything that would live on your kitchen counter because it's not done yet and you're not ready to file that, that's what I consider active paper.
And where should we be keeping this active paper, and what's the best way that you have found to organize it so that we don't forget to fill out the form?
So the kitchen counter is the best place for it, but we need to put it in a cute container. So 20 years ago, when my kids were 6 months and 2 years old, I created the Sunday basket. On a Sunday night when everybody was asleep, I took like a 12-inch high pile of paper that was not even paper clipped, just pieces of paper, and I spread them out on my family room floor and I paper clipped them all together. And eventually I created this system called the Sunday basket and created this habit when I had these little toddlers in the beginning of the 2000s, where I would go through every Sunday all this actionable stuff that had come into me during the week, process through as much as I could, pay all the bills I could, put everything on my calendar for the week. And then anything that could wait until next Sunday went in the Sunday basket and waited a week. And then during the week, mail that came in, emails that came in, papers that came in, even notes I would write to myself that could wait till Sunday, I would write them down and put them in my Sunday basket and batch task that on the weekends.
Well, I'm impressed with that because come Sunday night, all I want to do is go to bed, but you're up doing your tasks.
Well, the first time I did it in the evening, every other Sunday since I've done it between like 12 and 2.
That's great. You talk about incoming mail. I think that most of us could probably eliminate about 95% of incoming mail. So we don't even have to deal with it in the first place. And yet, this is one of the tasks that I have put off and put off and put off. What can you digitize and what should you actually still get in paper mail? Part of me hesitates because I think, oh, I'll digitize something and then I'll forget my password. And then somewhere, you know, say it's a retirement account, you know, somewhere I'm just going to lose it in the ether, right? So what's your advice on that and what you should digitize and what you should still get paper?
So I think whatever you're comfortable with is totally fine. I'm a paper person, so our retirement accounts are all digitized and we still get all the paper statements. We get the paper statements. My husband loves to open it up and go, look, we made money. Look, we lost money. And then we shred it. It's like a ritual that we do. Also, it took me 2 years, but I finally got all except for 3 of our bills digitized in our online banking. But I still have some of those come to me in the mail, which is a reminder, especially for variable things like our water bill or things like that, that are not always the same price. So when I see the mail come in, go like, okay, that's about what I remember paying last month so that I could see any discrepancy. I still get my credit card statements mailed to me. Again, I pay all that online, but I like to sit out back on the deck with my dog and every once in a while go through and see what am I automatically being charged every month. So I still like mail.
That's surprising for someone who's so organized and who has learned these methods and tricks for getting all the paper out that we don't need. It's surprising that you still like the paper coming into your house. But maybe it's because you have figured out how to not let it clutter up your life. And let's talk about that for just a second. What does the paper clutter do to us on a feng shui level or, you know, just cluttering up the rest of our whole psyche?
Yes, I think this is so important because I am Gen X and I was told that we were going to be paperless. Mm-hmm. And millennials have really embraced, you know, we don't want to have any paper. And the more I have conversations, generations up and down than me, we all have come to the realization that the paper isn't going anywhere. Like we can have less paper, but we are never going to be paperless. So once I embraced that mindset, I was like, okay, well, if we're going to have less, then what does less paper look like? Then I was able to say, okay, well, I basically only like 3 catalogs. And those 3 catalogs I love to look at, and I get rid of as much other paper as I can. And then having one Sunday basket to put it in and processing through all of it on Sunday, that helps me as well. So decide how much paper you feel comfortable with, and then as you're looking at your paper, categorize it. So catalogs is a category, manuals is a category, online bill paying is a category. You may say, why would I ever want to get my IRS statement, or not my IRS, my retirement statements sent to me? Like that information is outdated as soon as you open it. That may seem totally like something you don't want to do that I do. That's totally fine. Just make a choice. With all these categories of paper, make a choice. We don't have any manuals whatsoever in our house anymore because I'm never going to fix anything, first of all. And second of all, they're all available online. That's like a whole file drawer full of stuff I got rid of when I realized I'm never going to fix it. So we don't have phone books in our house anymore because we have college age kids. We're all going to use our phones for that. But you may say, well, I still like the phone book because I like the maps in the back. Some people may not even realize there are maps in the back of a phone book, but I know there are. So there's different reasons why we keep it. It doesn't matter. You can keep any paper you want and you can get rid of any paper you want. Just realize there is a certain amount of paper we're going to have.
Wow. Okay, so I'm actually sitting here looking at my file cabinet now, and I would be really embarrassed to have someone like you come in and see the kinds of stuff I'm holding on to. One of those things is that if you have investments or retirement accounts or things like that, there is this feeling that you shouldn't shred those or throw them away. And as you just said, it's old information as soon as you get it. So is there ever a reason to hold on to those statements?
Yes, there is. So talk to your financial advisor. I tend to talk very authoritatively. So please ask all the experts. I am none of those experts. If you have an individual stock, like I live in Cincinnati, we have Procter & Gamble stock. If you have Procter & Gamble stock, you keep every single piece of paper ever related to any of those trades because that stock has a dividend and it splits. And it depends when you sell it, what the cost basis was when you bought it. And now everybody's like, "What? This is glazing over as I'm talking." A mutual fund, you can shred anything related to a mutual fund because the things that are inside of a mutual fund is a whole bunch of different stocks that somebody else is managing. You don't have to worry about that. I also keep, you know, like when you sign up for a 401k or when you sign up for a life insurance policy or you sign up for healthcare, you get a big packet of information. I keep that big packet of information. And I personally keep our life insurance statement that I pay every single year to have proof that we've been paying for that every single year if, God forbid, we should need to make a claim on that. So ask your financial advisor, ask your attorney, ask whoever you're setting these things up with what you can shred and what you shouldn't shred. So there are a few things you need to keep, but anything that's like a rolling statement of something usually can be shredded.
Shredded. Tell me that horror story about someone who failed to shred whatever document and it came back to bite them, because I am someone who, I just don't shred stuff. I just throw it into the recycle bin. Why shouldn't I do that?
I don't shred stuff either, Lynn, and I don't have a single horror story to tell you. I mean, I've helped hundreds, I know, but people just get paranoid when I say recycle stuff. Now, I don't recycle things that have my social security card on them. I have shredded that, or my children's medical documents. I have shredded those, but the amount of things I have shredded are very small. I just throw away junk mail with my address on it. I mean, people know where I live. Like, I am not as worried about those things as some people are, but I know that, I like to err on the side of people who worry about things than the side of people who don't worry about things.
I love it. So no doubt when you started passing on your organizational tips to friends and things like that, they really took hold to the extent that now you have a podcast and you've decided to write a book. What is it, do you think about this, the secrets you possess about this very hard to achieve world of being organized with your papers?
I did not realize it was the secret in the beginning, and my audience told me what the secrets were, and they are a couple of things. One, I'm a teacher, so I approach everything from a point of a teacher, and I taught middle school algebra to boys. And they exactly did not want to learn that from me. So I had to learn how to teach algebra 8 different ways because I don't think students can fail to learn. I only think teachers can fail to teach. So I would come up with all these different ways to motivate students to learn algebra in middle school. And I take that same energy and I bring it to organizing. You cannot fail to learn to be organized. If you think that I'm an unorganized person, that is a fallacy. I want you to stop believing that. You just haven't learned yet. You haven't had a teacher that's taken the time to teach you. I will teach you to be, you will learn to be organized with Organize 365. And what my audience told me was two things. Number one, I'm not a perfectionist. I'm not an interior decorator. I want you to be functionally organized. I don't care if you have containers that match. I want you to live an organized life, not look like you're living in a magazine. And the second thing is I give you grace. I don't care how long it takes you. If you have 15 minutes a day, we'll just keep doing this. It might take us a couple of years, but you will get organized because I will give you the grace and the time and the resources and many, 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 many different ways to try until you succeed. Because only I can fail to teach you. You cannot fail to learn.
Are you sure about that?
Yep. I'm 100% sure about that.
Oh, I really like it. Well, let's see. So have you ever, I mean, you don't go into people's homes ever, or have you ever, you know, during this last dozen years that you've been perfecting the art?
Yes, for the first 5 years in Organize 365, I was an in-home professional organizer. I built a team. We went in, we would do your whole house in paper within a week. Yeah, we went from me doing 1 2.5-hour session to doing whole big houses in a week by the time I stopped doing in-home professional organizing.
Wow. Was there ever a house that you went into where you said, I just can't do this? I mean, there are yes. hoarders out there, right?
There are. It is a different skill set that I do not possess. We did do 3 houses that you would consider hoarder houses. They did not end up at the organizational level that you might have wanted to live in. But in all of those situations, we were able to get that family the help that they needed and get the organization to the level that the county would give the children back to the parents. And so we achieved the level of organization that that homeowner wanted. And I think that's important to know that, you know, with the whole idolization of minimalism, if I can say that, it seems like the goal is to live a minimalistic life in media right now. And I disagree. Like, I am not a minimalist. I'm also not a maximalist. I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I'm a medium family. I think we're mostly medium families. There are very few hoarders. There are very few true minimalists that could like live in a backpack. And we're all somewhere in the middle. And don't worry about what your neighbor is. Worry about what you feel most comfortable with. The goal with Organize 365 isn't to get you down to the absolute minimal amount of things in your house. It is for you to be organized, know where your things are that are functional, and love your home, love your life, love your things, love all the projects you have going on.
These are such good lessons. Lisa Woodruff is my guest. She's the founder and CEO of Organize 365. Her new book is The Paper Solution, What to Shred, What to Save, and How to Stop It from Taking Over Your Life. Lisa, I am so impressed that you have motivated me for what I'm going to do with my weekend. And I'll get back with you to let you know if I really did it.
Oh, good. Thank you so much, Lynn. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.